Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
We're going to do something a little bit different throughout this talk, because at a certain point I'm going to ask my friend and associate, Dr. Ellen Dickstein, to read some of the many questions that we get here at the Foundation as a result of the work that we do. But before I start that, I want to make a few comments that I think are important if a person really wants to change the kind of human being that he or she is. First of all, if you're not working in some way to change your life, it means that you have reached an unfortunate point where either through defeat, regret, cynicism, or a combination of all the above, you've concluded that there's no other recourse for you but to remain the kind of person that you've been. The flip side of that is that all over the world, billions of people have plans for tomorrow. Ways in which, once they achieve the new job, the new relationship, that they will be able to look in the mirror of their own mind and be at peace with themselves. And it's important that we spell out right at the top of this that we don't find peace through plans. We don't find a sense of well-being through cultivating relationships with the changing world, because the fact that the world is changing the way that it is will always bring us to that tipping point where suddenly we find ourselves feeling lost and frustrated, angry, because the world isn't staying the way it's supposed to be. So I want to talk about changing ourselves, what it means to change ourselves from a particular perspective. And this is such an important picture to get into your mind, what I'm about to relate to you, because how many of us have sat at home on any given morning or afternoon or get in bed at night and just thought to ourselves, what is the point of trying to be a different human being? Because if we've ever really been earnest in wanting to be different, being a more genuinely kind person, being more patient, not doing the things that defeat us or compromise us, not falling into pools of self-pity when the world doesn't turn properly. If we really wanted to make change, we've met the enemy, and as Pogo would say, the enemy is me. We've run into that wall, and because of a lack of understanding, a lack of knowledge on our part, we have been led to believe by our own nature that change as such, true change, true spiritual change, may not be possible. And so I want to give you some knowledge tonight. I want to put into your mind an image that then will connect to our wish to free ourselves and be new. I was walking this afternoon, and I live in the rural country, and there's not a lot of traffic, but from time to time, big tree loggers, they roll by on their, with their big rigs, or big pickup trucks will go by. And everyone knows that when you're walking down a two-lane highway and a big truck comes by, or a big semi of some kind comes rolling by, that as soon as it's past you, that you will stand in a wind for at least 2 or 3 seconds, sometimes longer than that, depending on the size of the rig that just blew by you. That's called the draft. That as that large vehicle moves through the space, it's actually pulling behind it air. It actually catches air and created by the vacuum that's behind it as it moves through. And all of this air floods into this vacuum. And as the truck rolls by at 40 or 50 miles an hour, and you're standing there, after that truck goes by, you get the wind that this thing is carrying in its draft. I think most of us can understand that. You know what we never think, and now I want you to see it. Do you know that when you try to come to a stop, when you try to change the kind of human being you are, you may succeed for a day, you may succeed for a little while, but the draft catches up with you. The weight of one's past. We don't think of it like that because we don't think in terms of a mind that carries around all of these experiences and ingrained sensations relative to things that we've been through in our lives. But I'm telling you, as surely as I'm speaking and you hear me, and I'll change it a little bit so you can see the picture of it, because I think it's so empowering. Look, how many of you ever thought to yourself, you know, tomorrow, man, that's it. This is a new me tomorrow. And you're new for about, 30 minutes, or maybe you get through 3 days. But there you are on the end of the third day or the 30th day, and all of a sudden you can feel something starting to sneak into your life. You can feel the depression. You can feel the old anxieties, the regrets. You can feel resentment. Stuff starts churning like James Taylor, the churning urn of burning funk begins moving inside of you, and suddenly you're in the draft and being carried along. Now, I'll show you a better way that you can see this, because you may not be able to see it easily by yourself. Do you know when you meet somebody, you never meet really who they are in the moment you meet them. You have to wait for the draft. This is great. Look, have you ever met somebody and they thought, "Mamma mia, this is it. This is the person." And then the day later, a month later, here comes the draft. Here comes their whole past that they've been able to move ahead of while they're trying to keep the impression in place. And you're standing there and you get run over by what they didn't announce by their actions. But eventually they couldn't hide anymore what had been in tow with them. Now, the reason it's so important to understand an idea like this is because when we, as men and women who want to make life different, personally, planetary, when we meet life and say, okay, you know, I've had a bad habit. Anybody have a bad habit listening to this? I've had a bad habit. Maybe it's just thinking about myself from morning to night. But maybe it's that I don't do things that I know I ought to do. Instead, I do the things I ought not do. You fill in the blank. And you decide, I'm going to change this. Because for one thing, it's not a question of wanting to make a good presentation anymore. I'm tired of being punished by it. Anything that I'm compelled to do, anything any human being is compelled to do, no matter how pleasurable it seems, is a punishment, because they are a slave to that compulsive need. If it's compulsive to think about yourself, no matter how sweet the thoughts may be, one suffers from such activity. And when a person wants to stop that, they need to understand that the first moment in which they make this decision based on a wish and a will, having seen what it's like to be who they are, they stand in one body, as a manner of speaking. They stand with one idea. They stand with one will for a moment. And it's connected to this wish to come up and be new. But in that human being, there is this ebb tide, this surge, this wave that follows them because of the kind of life they have had. And the key here is to understand this. Is the wind that follows the semi-truck on the highway, is that wind, does it have a life of its own? It doesn't have a life of its own. It has a life for as long as what generates its existence passes by me. But as soon as the object that creates the vacuum that pulls the air into it disappears, the air that was dragged behind it must return to its natural homeostasis. It has to become back to a balanced place. What we have to understand when we want to make changes in our lives is that we're going to have to meet the draft of our own past. But instead of resisting the draft of that past, instead of looking at it and then saying, oh no, look, here it is, what am I going to do with what happened and who I was, and there's no escaping that, we have to understand that the energy that we are in the path of, that it has no life of its own apart from what we do when it blows over us. That knowledge would allow us to let a mechanical impulse, because all activity of the past, and I don't care how deeply ingrained it is, that understanding would allow us to become quiet. It would let us have a new relationship with our own past, and out of that new relationship, a new authority over it. This takes dedicated work and a willingness to see the truth of these things, but if we'll do it, we can start to see that we've been battling windmills, and there's no need to keep fighting that kind of fight. We can change once we understand what's involved.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
Now, with that in mind, I want to take some of these questions that we get, because at the heart of every one of these questions ultimately is this idea, what do I have to do to change myself? Because everybody, one way or another, looks out and they recognize that they're compromised, that they're defeated, that they have regrets, that there's pains they don't know what to do about. And I want everyone who's listening to understand, I don't care what you have been through, I don't care what you think is true about you, the wind that follows you is just a wind. It's just a wind. You can be awake and grounded in the present moment, centered in your wish, if nothing else, to live from something that is higher. And then you can let that wind come and just move right past you. You remember that. So, hello, Dr. Ellen.
Hello, Guy.
Let's get started.
Okay, the first question is from Jenny, who lives in Dallas. And she says, "I used to love movies, shopping, parties, having a beautiful house. These things are beginning to feel so false to me. There is something in me reaching out to something that feels real, but I can't quite grasp it. Deep down, I know what is important in life. How can I escape these traps I have created?
What Jenny's asking is, what's happening to me? You know, this is a natural stage, Jenny, in your spiritual development, actually in everybody's spiritual development. Because there comes a time when the things that we were so happy doing just don't bring us the happiness that they used to do. You know, we have that experience our whole lives. I wish there were a way, even over this medium that we have here as I'm speaking, for me to encourage you, and you could do it right now while you're listening, to try and be as awake as you know how to be. And by awake, I mean aware of the whole of yourself. Now, to be aware of the whole of yourself doesn't mean that you're sitting and thinking, I'm aware of the whole of myself, I'm aware of the whole of myself, I'm aware of the whole of myself. Isn't the whole of myself the whole of my experience as a human being? Isn't that the whole of myself? See, here's our problem. Our little minds, and they are little, they just want to think about one little thing at a time. And that's part of our problem. If I could just get this one little thing, you know, right, then all the other little things would line up. Have you had all your little things ever line up? Nobody's little things all line up. This mind is not meant to be our eyes. It's not meant to determine the content of our heart, because it can only think towards things. If I'm aware of the whole of my life, I'm not thinking about the tendencies I have. I'm not thinking about, and listen, it's important, I'm not thinking about how when I was 12, I thought that the most important thing on the planet was football on Saturdays. I'm not thinking about that, and I'm not thinking about the resentment that I had when I turned 13 that I couldn't do that on Saturdays because I had to take out the garbage and mow the lawn. And I'm not thinking how eventually mowing the lawn earned me some money to get me a motorcycle, which was the most important thing in my life at 15. Because at the time, all I wanted was freedom. But in order to have that freedom, I had to have insurance. And to have insurance, I had to have more money. And then I couldn't ride my bike when I wanted to because I had to have a job to pay for it. And if you can see the genesis of this, what we see is the whole of our life is that we have always been going through attachments to things that we thought were the cause of our freedom. The whole of our life has been predicated on a certain condition that if we could grasp it thoroughly enough, strongly enough, would grant us the freedom, the happiness, the joy that those things did. But each and every time we outgrew them, because just by the fact of our physicality, we had to, maturing in a society the way we do. So now, here's a person, and they've come full circle in their maturity, Jenny has. And now she's had the house, she's got the car, they've got the boat, got all that business. And all the pleasure, all the freedom that she thought was going to be in those things suddenly isn't freedom, but it's slavery, because now she doesn't know what to do with these things. How many of us understand what that's like to some degree? So can we do what is necessary for us to do, which in this instance, Jenny, is to see this is a natural set of conditions that have come. Don't resist it. We're so afraid we're going to be left alone. Personally, we're so afraid that we're going to go a certain point, you know, down the spiritual path, and then just like Columbus, it's, oh my God, the end of the world. The whole thing was a lie. I'm going to fall off here. Truth never brings you to the end of a love affair without replacing that love with something greater than you were able to give yourself through what you formerly desired. It never does that. And when you start to see that, you begin to have a trust and a faith in it, which you must do, Jenny. You must start to recognize, all right, this is where I am. I'm going to let go a little bit. I'm going to learn to watch. And by all means, let your intuition guide you. If you're tired of these things, don't keep them going no matter what your mind tells you will happen to you. Something good is on the way. Let go of what's old.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it beautiful that there is something better than we can imagine for ourselves?
And that's exactly it. There is, not only is there something better than we can imagine for ourselves, but essentially all we do when we imagine what we want is cook our own goose. Basically, do you not always find yourself in the oven? At some point, come on, you know it's true. Let's go on.
Okay, Keith from Sacramento says, most of the time I feel like I am wandering aimlessly through life with no direction. My career is going nowhere. I live alone with no social life whatsoever. My life seems so meaningless. Isn't life supposed to be different from this? And if so, how?
Yes, life is supposed to be different from that. And just by the fact that you recognize that life is not intended to be a miasma of misery, you're on the right path. But we need to educate ourselves again. And this really goes to some of the opening comments that I made. All ruts, and one would have to agree, wouldn't you, Dr. Ellen? This fellow sounds like he's in a rut, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
All ruts have their root in resistance. All ruts have their roots in resistance. Now, in this instance, we have to understand that resistance has its roots in fear. Now, we're talking about someone, and to one degree or another, you know, we can hear questions like this, and I know so many people do. They go, oh, thank God I'm not like that guy. But we are like that guy. You're telling me you haven't been at home and thought to yourself, my career's going nowhere. I don't have a life. My social life stinks. Just let's end it here. Every human being has days like that, including the President of the United States. The problem is, in this instance, what's necessary to change that? Because there's a dynamic in such circumstances where one finds themselves in a life they don't want. And the dynamic that has to do with this life that we don't want and why it keeps going on the way it does. Now listen, Keith. It's because you don't want it. That's why it keeps going on. We actually are like a moth attracted to a flame when it comes to negative states, things that I don't want. You have to ask yourself, sir, and everyone else interested in this, why do I spend so much time thinking about what I don't want? What is the attraction in it? And can I see that there must be some relationship between how attracted I am to thinking about the situation I don't want and the fact that I don't get out of the situation? Because if we can do something like that, we can start to recognize two very important points. First, we actually have a sense of security in our suffering. There's actually a sense of this is, you know, at least as bad as it is, it's familiar to me. Because every day I can sit and I can look at the wall and I can look at the people that I think are more fortunate than I, and I can feel sorry for myself, and at least that's sure. Whereas what I need to do to make some real change in my life, that's absolutely uncertain to me. And that's the point, to begin to recognize that there must be this instance in which a person looks at his or her life properly and sees, okay, these are the choices. First, remain as I have been, recognizing that there's no way my exterior life is going to become any different until I do. And then if I must be the one that changes before the circumstances I find myself in can change, then I'm going to have to risk the things that I fear. I'm going to have to give up this relationship I have with reliving why everything isn't right and risk some things. So there it is. You want a different kind of life, and I don't care who you are, no matter where you are in the world or what you have. There's only one way to have a new life, and that is to recognize the captivity inside of the mind that keeps the old one going, even as it says, I wish it wasn't like this, I wish it wasn't like this, and then dare to just simply walk out of that. Risk it.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Let's take the next one.
This is from Rosie in Silver Springs.
Rosie.
When I relate to people, I feel as if a part of me is missing or
Wasn't that like Ed McMahon for a moment?
A little bit.
It was,
yes.
Wasn't it? So let's try it again.
Okay. When I relate to people...
No, say the Rosie thing.
Oh. This note is from Rosie from
Rosie.
Silver Springs.
Okay.
But her life isn't that rosy. She says, when I relate to people, I feel as if a part of me is missing or holding me back from being fully present and receptive to the moment. I suspect I'm telling myself something as soon as I am able to relate to others. Any insights on how I can stop this behavior?
Rosie has a thorny situation, doesn't she? Who can't relate to what Rosie's saying here? I want to be natural. I want to be relaxed around people. I want to say things that I know are valuable in terms of contributing to a conversation. And yet I get around people and something just goes all out of whack. I can't for the life of me do anything other than sit and judge myself instead of being in relationship in the moment with the people around me. I think everybody, Rosie, feels like that. And this is a kind of an important idea that across the board to any question I'll ever answer. There is a part of us that loves to magnify our own misery. It's built into us, and a big part of our spiritual problem when it comes to getting past ourselves and our own past is that we don't recognize how our mind can take one thing, like my inability to be at ease with people, and it can actually spin that thing into a web the size of gargantuous, you know, some just so big that then all I can do is struggle with it, even though I may not even be with people anymore. This is an example, and you have to see this in your life. I may not even be around people, and I can't stop thinking about how I can't be around people and be at ease. Because my mind has become literally a slave of a certain concept that's gone awry inside of it, and that is that I'm supposed to be a certain kind of person. It's a natural need that we have as human beings, and it is. It's a natural need for relationship. That's first. It is through relationship with life that we have a chance to see a reflection of ourselves. Every human being on this planet, even our enemies, is our friends. Because through relationship with them, we are afforded glimpses into the nature of ourselves by which we would never have a chance to see ourselves. But if when we see ourselves through relationships with other people, we begin to stop seeing what is actually taking place inside of us and begin to resist what we think is taking place, then we lose sight of the value of the relationship and we ourselves become part of what ruins everything, because all I can do is sit and think about myself when I'm with people. So the first thing that I would strongly suggest, and it's going to sound contradictory, but it's a very powerful idea. The next time that Rosie is with someone, Rosie, next time you're out with people, you make it your intention to be a watcher of yourself, someone who watches herself, as opposed to someone who wants to be herself. Now listen carefully. It's an important concept. What does it mean to watch yourself? Watching yourself doesn't mean to sit and think about yourself, how you're not doing what's right. That is not watching yourself. Watching yourself requires that you step back psychologically. You disconnect from Rosie's mind the way it's always weighing itself in the company of others. And you watch Rosie instead of trying to fix her. I'm going to say it again. You watch Rosie instead of trying to fix her. It's when we try to fix ourselves that we don't see we're clinging to ideas about how we're supposed to be and then using them to try to change ourselves. And everything that we try to do to change ourselves through an idea that we have about ourselves is like a hammer on ourselves, because we never succeed according to the images that we have. So that doesn't work. So the next time you're out with people, slow down. Just slow down. Sit back a little bit, and by all means, whenever you feel the need, say what you want to say, but don't be there, Rosie, trying to figure out how you can be who you think you're supposed to be. Just let go a little bit and things will change. Let's go to the next one.
Okay. This is from Joe from Minneapolis. I want to mention a very dark side of myself that I experience, mostly upon arising in the mornings. I have to do a lot to rid myself of these awful feelings, almost like feeling hopeless before I even begin my day. What can I do to make a better start?
So what Joe is saying is that when he gets up in the morning, he's visited by a lot of tormenting thoughts and feelings, essentially. You know, there's an old saying that I have. I call it revisiting the scene of the crime. We have to be more astute, more awake to ourselves than we are. That's the first thing. Every unhappiness we have, no matter what it is, it is due to a certain degree of unawareness that we have. So unawareness allows these conditions to produce themselves. Awareness resolves them. And in this instance, what I mean by revisiting the scene of the crime, have you ever noticed, Dr. Dickstein, that a certain experience will take place. You could be, had a bad dream. Have you ever, do you ever have a bad dream?
Occasionally, yeah.
Have you ever noticed how you can't wait to run it through it 1,000 times when you get up?
Yes. You wake up with that awful feeling, and then you just relive it.
And you just, let me see what I missed in this bad dream.
Uh-huh. Right. And the more you ask yourself, what did it mean, the more you're immersing yourself in it.
So don't you think that there's something fundamentally mistaken in a mind that first dredges up horrific thoughts, bad feelings, mm-hmm. and then as it dredges them up, jumps into them to try to free itself from them?
Yeah, it doesn't sound very logical.
No, it's not logical at all, and that's the whole point. When we're identified, which is the problem that Joe is having, he's so used to these negative thoughts and feelings and being absorbed by them that he doesn't understand the fundamental gift of life, one of them anyway. My attention is my attention. See, Joe, I'm not going to raise my voice here, although I'm tempted to start jumping out of my chair. It's your life, man. Where on earth did we get the idea that somehow or other that just because a negative thought or feeling passes through the mind, seizes the heart, crushes, just whatever it does, why, where is it written that that must be who and what I am? This is what's happened to humanity. Your attention belongs to you. Right now while I'm talking. And it is what you do with your attention that determines what the experience you have of life is. Because it is your attention that is your relationship. And it's relationship, moment to moment, that determines the experience I have. And if I don't like the experience of these negative thoughts and feelings being there every morning when I wake up, then I need to stop inviting them into my mind and heart. And I know what Joe would say, I'm not inviting them in. They're just there. And I say the same thing. Whose house is it? Whose life is it, Joe? This is something, you know what, you could read every book that ever written on the subject, and there are not many that are worthwhile, I'll add that too. And you'll always come down to the same point. You want your life, you're going to have to take it back. And the way you take it back is by seeing that you have been involved in giving it away. And that's what we are. Every time we revisit the scene of a crime, meaning what we didn't like, what she did, what didn't work out, what happened 20 years ago, every time we revisit that, we are conspirators in generating a certain conflict in our own heart and mind that then, because of the pain of it, we're driven further into the conspiracy to resolve it. So, Joe, wake up, man. What you can do. This very day, you can actually find yourself being withdrawn into those thoughts and feelings as everyone here can, because you're not alone. And instead of going along with it, you use your attention. You remember something higher. If you just want to start with that, work at putting your attention onto that which does not steal from you the way your present set of thoughts and feelings are doing. I think that the most important thing of all when it comes to issues like this is that we must somehow or other, and it usually is begotten by a certain amount of conscious pain, we must recognize that, you know what, it would be better for me to not know anything at all about myself than to be so sure about myself as I am through the pain I have because of what my mind and thought, my heart is telling me. I wish I could broadcast. I wish I could spiritually broadcast. In fact, I'm doing it. I wish I could spiritually broadcast over the entire universe the idea that we are not here to serve our own thoughts and our own feelings, that they're here to serve us. And that if there's something dark or despairing, discouraging inside of any thought or any feeling, we don't owe it one thing. It is not meant to be living in us. It is not meant to be living in us. If it's there, the light of awareness can change it, but it can't change it if we're caught up in being identified with it. So everything begins with being awake.
Here, Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
Let's take the next question.
Okay. This next question is kind of related to the one you just answered from Joe. And this one is from Vern from Vancouver. And he says, when I find myself dominated by a sudden fear about some calamity that seems to loom ahead, what response will release its hold on me and will also weaken its power to plague me the next time something looms?
Vern, I have good news for you and everyone else. You know, when we started this talk, I spoke of a new kind of knowledge that a person had to have, and that out of that knowledge it was possible to enter into a new relationship with the events in one's life, and because of that new relationship predicated in higher knowledge, a person would have new authority. We're meant to have complete authority over every fear we have. Because this nature, the mind itself, our the construct of our present nature, which is a divided mind, it cannot not do what it does as long as it's in place. You know, it's like a donut machine. You turn it on, out come donuts. With our mind, you turn it on, out come dumb thoughts. The mind generates fear. Life doesn't bring fear. The mind generates it. There is no fear such as we know psychologically, mentally, emotionally in the world. It doesn't exist. To understand, to have the knowledge and then the willingness to work at understanding the relationship that produces the fear is the beginning of the authority over it. And in this instance, Vern and everyone else, there is no fear of tomorrow without negative imagination. If one's mind didn't picture what was going to take place, whether it's 10 seconds from now or 10 millennia from now, if the mind didn't generate the image and then the same mind fill that image with all manner of conflicted feelings due to not wanting the very image it has produced, there'd be no fear. So the mind actually produces what it fears and then goes, oh no, I hate that. We're going to make a funny horror movie for a moment. Here's a guy. He gets up in the morning. He doesn't know he's a magician. And he's living in a nice house. But when he opens his eyes, his imagination says, you know, what happens if tomorrow I lose everything? And the minute he has that thought,
the house, cobwebs and broken windows and everything, because he's manifested immediately. And then as soon as he sees this, he thinks, I knew it. I knew it. And what lives in a house like this? Monsters. And as soon as he thinks the word monster, up, here's a monster. Now, he spends all day long running from the monster that was the effect of the first negative picture he had, born of his fear of tomorrow. And a person will spend their whole life like that, never knowing that all they have to do to dismiss the monsters in their lives is wake up from the dream that produced it. And that's all he has to do. That's all any of us have to do. But we have to see, you have to see, you know, Christ said, let those of you with eyes who see, we have to be able to see the fact of that. The rational mind doesn't particularly see clearly when it's generating fearful images and then trying to protect themselves from it. But the spiritual mind, an awakened mind, simply a sane mind, recognizes that it's actually acting against itself when it produces within itself that which it resists. So if I stop creating what I resist because I fear it, do I have fear anymore? I don't. Let's take the next one.
Okay. Paula from Torrance writes, how do you let go of worrying what others think about you? I know it's wrong, but I do the things I don't want to do, not the things I need to do.
I knew a marvelous man. His name was Vernon Howard. And he was a great light in this world for the years in which he walked it. He said, and I tell Paula this, he said, permitting your life to be taken over by another human being is like letting the waiter eat your dinner. I think that what we have to understand is that there is a certain kind of trickery taking place inside of us relative to thought. If when a sting operation takes place, or you happen to see at any particular time, if you do a magician or an illusionist, someone who's tricky. The way it works is they get your attention on what they want your attention on, and while your attention's on one hand, so to speak, they're doing their devilry. You know, on the other side, they're producing the trick so you don't see it because your attention where it is. It's the same thing with the mind in a situation like this. What we have to do is something that's challenging at first because we're not used to using our attention this way. What we need to do is look at, in the moment that it's taking place, what we are allowing, what we are permitting to rule our life, as opposed to why it's doing that. Now, what does that mean? Here I am. I'm anxious. I'm fearful. I'm caught up in some negative state. And the negative state is very convincing in its presence in me because it's telling me the reason that I'm like this. And then it fills in the blank. In this instance, because I want the approval of other people or whatever it may be. So the negative states are actually justifying their existence in me. And I identify with them and agree to the justification because I see through their eyes what I must have if I'm to be a happy, content person around other people. So I actually look through the eyes of this fear. I look through the eyes of this wanting approval so desperately because it's telling me if I'll do what it tells me to do, I will arrive at this moment where I won't be afraid of people anymore. I'll be content or confident or whatever it is that she wants. And what we're saying here is that we must begin to put our attention on what it is that we're giving our lives to in the moment, not why it tells us we must do that. Let me ask you, can you understand what I'm saying, Dr. Dickstein?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a subtle point. When I'm with people, and let's say I'm afraid or I want their approval and I'm nervous, who's my guide in a moment like that? The guide is my negative state that's telling me the reason I feel like I do is because these people aren't approving of me. They don't see me. They don't want to be seen. So now I've given myself over to this identifying with the negative state that is telling me the answer to this terrible sense of unhappiness you have is to let me tell you who and what to be. And the more that it does that, the more I'm actually set outside of the very relationship with other human beings that I want to be, because I'm more and more afraid, not more and more confident. So instead of why I must feel like this way, you know, because it says if you don't, something terrible is going to happen. No, listen, you bring your attention into the present moment and you put it on what is coursing through you. You put it on what is talking to you, not what it is talking to you about. And if you'll do that, there is an intelligence that lives inside of us, a spiritual goodness, a wisdom, and it will not compromise itself, and it can't be tricked into putting its attention on where these negative thoughts and feelings are directing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one last question.
One last question.
Glenn from Reno writes, would it be fair to assert that every single thing that happens to us in our life has been caused to happen for the direct purpose of exposing some falsehood under which we have been living?
Briefly, the moment that we are in has no content of its own, but reflects what we have brought into it with us. Which means that lessons literally ride in on the back of the events that we experience. Because the lesson is always about what I have yet to understand about myself. And the more that I'm capable of working to see in the moment that whatever it is I'm experiencing is a direct reflection, and actually, I like this word, is a direct invitation from wisdom itself, from goodness itself, for me to begin to let go of who I have been by just simply being willing to see that what I have brought with me into this moment, let's say I'm going to go back to Paula. It's not adequate. So why would I continue to turn to what isn't adequate to relieve a heartache if that inadequacy itself is part of the pain? So we can begin to do so much better than this. And I've run out of time, so I'll conclude the idea with this last sentence. Each and every one of us is created to be able to transcend who and what we have been. Our past need not be our path. If we recognize that there is a great perfecting force in this life whose sole purpose is to liberate us from that past. If we can understand that, we can be new, and then there's hope.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com. where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.